every night I dream a little dream. And of course, Prince Charming is the theme that he for me. Although I realize as well as you, it is seldom that a dream comes true. To me, it's clear that he'll appear. Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, I'll understand. And in a little while, he'll take my hand. And though it seems absurd, I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I will meet him someday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still I'm sure to meet him one day, maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home just meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Who would you? And so all else above, I'm waiting for the man I love.
Can finally be announced who the singer was on that 1962 recording. This is J.D. Doyle with Queer Music Heritage, and I'm delighted to bring you an interview revealing a 50-year-old secret and telling its fascinating story. The album was called Love is a Drag, and while there certainly were lyrically gay single recordings dating back to the 1920s, to my mind, that 1962 album was the earliest where every song was talking man to man. The recording's subtitle may seem odd today, but it was For Adult Listeners Only, Sultry Stylings by a Most Unusual Vocalist. And the album jacket had absolutely no information on who the singer was or who produced it. It's been in my collection for many years, and I could never find out any information on it whatsoever. This interview kind of fell in my lap. I received an email from Murray Garrett. He is now 85, and I learned that from the late 1940s through the early 1970s, he was a famous Hollywood photographer. And there currently are several books available collecting his candid shots of the royalty of Hollywood in those days. For example, he was Bob Hope's photographer for 25 years. In 1953, Murray Garrett formed a business partnership with Gene Howard. Howard already had an interesting career. Through the 1940s, he was male vocalist for a number of big bands, including those of Francis Craig, Bob Chester, Gene Krupa, and finally Stan Kenton. And he stopped singing for the Kenton Band in 1946 to become their publicity director before freelancing until 1953. Then, as I have said, he and Murray Garrett formed the photographer studio Garrett and Howard. Gene Howard died in 1993 at age 72, so that sets the stage for the interview. I may have asked Murray some questions perhaps a bit too detailed for some, but I was being given the key to a 50-year-old mystery, and I wanted to get all the facts into the open. And also, he tells a delightful story. Before we get to the interview, I want to share another track from the Love is a Drag LP.
It's cost me a lot, but there's one thing that I've got. It's my man. Cold and wet, tired you bet, but all that I soon forget with my man. He's not much for looks, and no hero out of books, as my man. Two or three guys has he that he likes as well as me, but I love him. I don't know why I should. He isn't good. He isn't true. He beats me too. What can I do? Oh, my man, I love him so. He'll never know. All my life is just despair. But I don't care when he takes me in his arms. The world is bright, all right. What's the difference if I say I'll go away when I know I'll come back on my knees someday? For whatever my man is, I am his forevermore. I say, I'll go away when I know I'll come back on my knees someday. For whatever my man is, I am his forevermore.
So you've been in Hollywood for decades now, right?
Actually, I was sent out here in 1946. By a company I was working for in New York to create a mirror image of their New York office. And they sent me out for 6 months, and I stayed, and I thought about, do I really want to go back to New York and marry my girlfriend and have children in the snow and all that crap? Or do I want to stay out of here? And I told them at the end of the 6 months I just wasn't going back. So it ended up was a very good decision. Ended up with a wife, three wonderful kids, and eventually owning the business.
And a glorious Hollywood career.
Yeah, just amazing. I don't know if you Googled me or not.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then you got an idea of what I've been and where I've been. Along the way, I was very, very, very lucky to become friendly with Gene Howard. And that brings us to where we are today.
I was so pleased you contacted me. It's one of those mysteries of collecting that I never thought I would know the answer.
When you get to be my age, and you start to think about, what should I correct? And I kept thinking of, Gene had a career with Gene Krupa where he was the other vocalist to Anita O'Day. Then he joined Kenton, who scooped him up when he found out he was free with Krupa, and he ended up being next to June Christie. So Gene never had a chance, and he was such a good vocalist, aside from a great better angel, and probably the most creative man I ever met.
Well, I did find a few recordings on the market for him, but he certainly didn't get the name June Christie, for example, you know, achieved.
Oh, no, absolutely not, you know. And it was a great frustration because he loved both of those gals.
Well, let's get to the album. How did the idea for Love is a Drag come about?
Well, it somehow was something that stuck in my mind from the time I was a teenager when I had my first experience in a Greenwich Village nightclub. And I don't remember the guy's name, but a really good-looking guy came out on the stage and had marvelous presence, and I was always a music nut. And I'm sitting there, and I'm listening to this guy sing, and I say, A, he's a good singer, and B, I'll be damned if he's not singing the what I would have called girl lyrics. And then I realized, my God, that's what he's done on every song. I was really square. I had no idea what was happening. And one of the people with me, when I mentioned that, said, well, don't you understand what's going on? And I said, well, no, what's going on? And he explained that the guy was gay, that we were in a essentially gay nightclub that catered to good musicians. And I was just overwhelmed at the thought that here are these great things that were written by people like the Gershwins and on that were being performed by either a man or a woman with having the lyrics changed. Somehow or other, that stayed in my mind for years and years. And every time I'd hear one of these songs, I'd smile. And then back in the early 60s, one of our big clients at that time, photographically speaking, was Liberty Records. Liberty Records was founded by two guys, a guy named Jack Ames, who used to be with MGM Records, and a guy named Cy Waronker, who used to be, you know, one of the head fiddle players at Fox. And lo and behold, they came out with Cry Me a River with Julie London, had an enormous hit, couldn't actually press, they didn't have the money to press as much LPs as they were selling. And I don't know the real inside story. I know that bad blood developed between these two guys business-wise, and it ended up with Cy bought Jack out. And Jack started his own label called Edison International Records, and he asked if we would consider, you know, doing his graphics and or his photographs for LPs that he was going to produce in the future. Jack had great respect for us, A, because of Gene's background, B, because of my background. And one night he and I were drinking, and he said, you guys are so creative. Is there anything that you think that I could do that could become a hit that is unusual, that isn't the same? You know, because I don't want Liberty to say to you, well, this was something you could have given to us. And I then went on to tell him about my experience in Greenwich Village, and that this thing has always stayed with me, and that I had, at one time, I was doing a life story up in San Francisco, and I saw something similar to this guy, and I told him that the guy in San Francisco did a knockoff of a female singer's version of The Man I Love with bongos and stuff like that. And he started smiling. He said, you know, it's a marvelous idea, but I don't want that to be one of my first LPs on my label. He said, you know, because I don't want that to be the primary identity for the company.
Right.
So he said, do you have any ideas? And I just spit it out. I just said, you know, you could call it maybe like Love is a Drag. And he said, oh, my God, that's it. He said, why don't you go back and talk to Gene about it to see if you can convince him to do it? And I did. I went back and I said to Gene, you're not going to believe this. And Gene looked at me and said, Murr, if I do that, I've got two grown daughters, and I think Marge's really... So he said, I have to really talk to her about it. I said, you know, sure, be my guest. So he talked to Marge, And then Marge asked if she could talk to me, and we all got together and had lunch. And she said, is this going to be done with dignity? I said, I wouldn't do it. You know, it's not a comedy album. I said, Gene is a terrific vocalist. I told Jack that Gene would insist on the best sidemen in Hollywood, and, you know, he would approve all arrangements. And she said, I would like to be there when it's recorded. I said, Marge, you can be there when it's recorded. I'm producing the session. If you find anything that you feel is in bad taste, talk to me about it, and I'll make a decision right there and there. And then if we have a discrepancy, we'll have one. And if we don't, we'll just go ahead and get it done.
From Love Was a Drag is The Man I Love.
When the mellow moon begins to beam, every night I dream a little dream. And of course, Prince Charming is the theme that he for me. Although I realize as well as you, it is seldom that a dream comes true. To me, it's clear that he'll appear. Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, I'll understand. And in a little while, he'll take my hand. And though it seems absurd, I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I will meet him someday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still I'm sure to meet him one day, maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home just meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Who would you? And so all else above, I'm waiting for the man I love.
Any reservations about it?
But Gene was an amazing guy. He, without a doubt, one of the most talented people I have ever met. He was enormously talented. He had no talent for being in business. you know, that's just the way things went. So Gene totally relied on me in business. And, you know, if he was sitting here right now, God bless him, he would nod affirmatively. So that's the kind of relationship that he and I had. And, you know, in trying to settle the books before I leave this earth, I got this bug up my ass about, hey, wouldn't that be great? You know, we finally unmasked this thing. It's floating around somewhere. And I started searching the internet. And that's, you know, how you and I met.
So was everybody involved with the project straight?
Everybody. It's amazing. The guys that are on the cover, in the foreground, the guy smoking is a guy named Bill Kinzer, now deceased. He was the partner of later to be my partner, Leo Monahan, who's the great artist I told you to Google, who's just an incredibly talented man. And he's now living in North Carolina. So both of those guys eventually were married, had families. And as I said, Bill died at an early age. Leo is still kicking around.
So was this intended for the gay market or just to be an unusual record?
When we talked about how to market it, wanting to keep the thing in good taste, first of all, I didn't know that in 1962 and 3, and which is when this was done, that there was indeed a gay market for music. I mean, been to San Francisco enough times, I understood that there was indeed a gay market in many things, but I didn't know that you could specifically produce an album, a musical album, for the gay market. And so at no time did it ever occur to me to go after the so-called gay market, because I really didn't know it existed or really how to reach it. And so when Jack and I talked about the marketing plans, I said, you know, I think you should release it the way you would release any other album and let it find its own way. And then, you know, then we had some marvelous experiences that I think you'll enjoy. We did a lot of Liberace covers, and Gene had a marvelous sense of humor, but he was a very bashful guy. So Liberace came in, he brought his candelabra with him, and we had already rented this huge piano for the occasion. And he went in the dressing room and he got all dressed in his suit of lights and came out with the candelabra, and we figured out where we wanted it and stuff. And while he and Gene were setting that stuff up, I went over, we had a marvelous sound system, and I went over to the turntable and I plopped on Love is a Drag, you know, one of the early pressings before I think it was released. And I put it on, and as soon as Gene heard the first cut, he looked at me and said, oh, no. I said, just relax. And so the record played one side, then I flipped it over and did the other side. Liberace, who at this point, you know, knew us fairly well, me in particular, never, ever said a word. When the shoot was over, he went back into the dressing room, got out of his costume, back into his street clothes, picked up his candelabra, and very quietly walked over to the turntable, picked up the record, and said, ta-ta. And he walked out, you know, with the record. And I can't tell you how many times after that I saw him. And he said, you know, you guys produced my favorite album.
That was before it was released, even.
Yeah, that was, you know, it had just been pressed. It had the label, it had the jacket, but I don't think it had been in stores. And then talking about the gay market, the biggest record store at that time, and I don't know how familiar you are with L.A., but there was a drive-in theater on the corner of La Cienega and Wilshire Boulevard, which had all gay waiters, car hops. So diagonally across the street from that establishment was a major record store. And I get a call from Jack Ames saying, guess what? I keep getting calls from the guys in the store on the corner of La Cienega and Wilshire that every waiter and every waiter's friend has come in to purchase anywhere from 1 to 6 of these albums. I said, you're putting me on. At that point, I said, well, you know, we got to get it into spots where we know that there's heavy gay traffic, like the right places in San Francisco and Greenwich Village and wherever else they exist in the country. Sinatra got the LP, and he thought it was Dick Haymes singing. I was very friendly with a guy named Lee Hazelwood. He wrote These Boots Are Made for Walking. Lee gave a copy of the album, actually had me sign the album over to Nancy Sinatra, who in turn gave it to her father. He said to her, you know, you got to get me a couple of dozen of these. It was that kind of word of mouth thing. And we really thought, okay, this is it. We've made it. You know, we're going to make a lot of money. And then it turned out that, and I don't know the whole story, and I don't want to malign Jack Ames because he was a nice guy. But somehow he had bitten off more than he could chew with whatever money he got for his share of Liberty and couldn't, because he had signed Jackie DeShannon. I don't know if that name means
to
you.
Yes, I know. She had several releases on Edison International.
Exactly. And so Jack had signed her. We did all the pictures and, you know, all the PR stuff. But nobody ever got paid anything from Jack. So I have no idea, because we try to find out where the hell the masters are. Because I had said to my attorney, let's make an attempt to try to buy back those masters. And we were never successful, and we could not get anywhere with them.
It was starting to take off, and then business-wise, he couldn't produce.
Yeah, he evaporated. He and Edison International, they evaporated. We had become personal friends, I thought, and I no longer heard from him.
It happens that there is a song on the Love Was a Drag album that Gene Howard had recorded earlier, around 1945, with the Stan Kenton Orchestra. Now, I only have about 30 seconds of it, as that's all I could hear without buying the entire CD. But I thought you might like to hear just a clip of the song, She's Funny That Way.
Just glad I'm living and lucky to be. I've got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. I can't save a dollar, ain't worth a cent. But she'd never holler, she'd live in a tent. I've got a woman.
And 20 years later, He's Funny That Way.
I'm not much to look at. Nothing to see. Just glad I'm living and lucky to be. I got a man crazy for me. He's funny that way. Can't save a dollar. Ain't worth a cent, but he'd never holler, he'd live in a tent. I got a man crazy for me. He's funny that way. Though he loves to work and slave for me every day, he'd be so much better off if he'd be unhappy without me, I know. And I've got a man crazy for me. He's funny that way.
Can you tell me about what year the album was recorded?
It's either 62 or 63, because the two guys on the cover came to Garrett Howard to work. What I did, I gave them rent-free space because I thought they were so talented. And they got there in like 62. So my guess is it either was 62 or 63. That's the very best guess. I can't give you a date because I honestly do not have one.
I could not really find one on the Internet. It's hard to research these things 50 years later.
Oh, yeah, without question. But I can tell you that, you know, in discussing this with Leo Monahan, I said, didn't you and Bill get to us in 62 or 63? He said, yes, yeah, I think it was 62. And I have no idea where those records would be except whatever happened to them with Jack Ames, because he paid the recording studio, or he never would have gotten the masters.
Was it released right after it was recorded?
Oh, very shortly after it was recorded.
Because sometimes they're delayed. But this was
No. See, he didn't have anything. You know, he was preparing to sign Jackie DeShannon, which was his big project.
I'm going to interject that after our interview, I realized I might be able to figure out whether the album was released in 1962 or in 1963, based on the story you heard a few minutes ago about Liberace. I researched the Liberace LP discography and found that the cover of one of them, definitely released in 1962, sounded like the way Murray described the photo shoot, at a piano and with a candelabra. And Liberace released no albums in 1963, and the covers of the ones released in 64 and 65 were different. I emailed Murray a scan of the cover, and he immediately identified it as their photo. So, 1962 it is. Hey, to a historian, this stuff matters.
How many copies were pressed? Any idea?
He told me that they had pressed whatever the minimum was in those days with his presser. I think it was 20,000.
Oh.
My son, who was with RCA as an executive at the record company, and then later with BMG until his retirement, had a party one night, and we were in this hotel, and he was waving wildly to me to come over. And I made my way through the crowd in the bar, and I got over to him. He said, open the box, and here's a mint copy of Love's a Drag. I said, are you kidding me? He said, no, and it's mine. I said, no kidding. How did you get this? And he introduced me to the guy that gave it to him as a present. They were selling for $200 a copy in New York. And this had to be 1997 or 8.
And they were like 20,000 copies pressed?
To my knowledge. See, everything I say to you with a caveat. That's what Jack Ames said. He had the press as a minimum.
Okay.
I never saw a bill. I don't know for a fact that that's true. I don't know for a fact that it's untrue. So I'm repeating to you what Jack said to me. And at that time, I trusted Jack implicitly. And I believe that number, you know.
Was it advertised, like in press, in newspapers? And
no, you see, the thing that Jack didn't want to do, he didn't want to have the identity in the industry of being a producer of gay music.
But the label was called Lace Records. It was called...
Right, but it was released through Edison International.
So you see, Billboard magazine, you can search online, and I couldn't find any mention of it.
No. What we were hoping to do eventually, the grand plan was that at some point, as the thing would, as we hoped, have exploded, we would then come out and say, okay, guess what? We have discovered the singer, and have a separate PR campaign. Both Gene and I knew a lot about PR campaigns. So we would have had that done, and again, in good taste. And you would have heard virtually what you're hearing now, because Gene was anything but braggadocio. And neither one of us had any reason to lie about it, because essentially that's how it took place.
Well, there wasn't anything negative about it.
No, exactly. You know, all we really cared about was to get this thing out and not to be offensive, because we had no reason to lisp or camp or do any of the stuff that the that the guys were doing in San Francisco. You know, when I saw this, the Man I Love done with bongos and stuff.
Yeah, if it would have been done camp, it would have been an entirely different thing.
Exactly. So we figured, you know, we had a chance to do something that we felt, you know, we would be proud of and would indeed be constructive and non-offensive to our gay friends. Because Gene had a lot of gay friends. I had a lot of gay friends.
Were there any session musicians that I would have heard of?
Well, I don't know how up you were on musicians, but the drummer was Dick Shanahan. The guy who played the terrific flute was Heinie Bo, who's famous. Pianist was Bobby Hammack. And the guitarist, bass guitar. Oh no, Al Viola was on the guitar. And then there was a bass player who was famous. And I can't, for the life of me, think of his name. Usually I have these things come right away, but I can't think of that guy. But they were all outstanding guys who worked every day, every night. They were top, top sidemen.
Murray told me later in an email that the bass player was Morty Korb, who Wikipedia tells me appeared on some 300 recordings for some of the greats like Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole, and on and on. And again, from the album, here's a double play with the songs He's My Guy and The Boy Next Door.
I don't care what he does, 'cause he's my guy. I guess he always was. He's careless about me. I don't think he tries, but once in a while he'll kiss me and smile, and I can see me in his eyes. Oh, he's my guy. I know he'll always be, and I will try to keep him loving me. However he wants me, I'm his until I die, for nobody knows better than I that he's my guy. And I will try to to keep him loving me however he wants me. I'm his until I die, for nobody knows better than I that he.
First people to do an album like this done in a serious nature?
Everybody tells us that. At that time, everybody said, what a marvelous idea. And everybody in the business that knew us and knew that we did it said, you know, we're so glad. And particularly, you know, my gay friends, you know, hey, we really want to thank you for doing it like you did it and not getting into any temptations to do something, you know, that might have gotten some laughs, but in the long run would have been derisive, not only to the music, but to gay people.
To the audience.
Yeah, you know, we had no desire to do that.
Have you heard of an album or a label called Camp Records?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about them?
Nope.
Okay. Because they put out a series of 45s that were very stereotypical, but they also had an album called Mad About the Boy, which was done, pardon the expression, straight.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this project? Or
I heard some of the music, but I didn't know, you know, I don't know who did it, I don't know where it was done. Anytime anything like this would happen, after everybody, certainly in Hollywood. See, I was also on the board of directors of the West Coast board of directors of NARAS. So I was in a position where I had people calling me saying, hey, guess what? You know, and in many instances, people would call and say, hey, did you do another album? And I'd say, no. You know, what are you talking about? That was a one-shot thing with Gene. That was it.
So you never really heard any facts behind Camp Records?
Not that I can recall. If I did, I couldn't imagine that I would not remember it.
Because that was another one of those secret records that you can't find anything about.
Well, I think, rightfully or wrongfully, we broke some ground and inspired people to do stuff because they thought there was a buck behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And there might have been had it been done properly.
I found an ad in a magazine for Camp Records in 1965. So, you know, I know that probably around that time they were doing their thing. But what I could never prove was your album was definitely several years ahead of that.
Oh, there's no question. As I said, those two guys on the cover were working at Garrett Howard. And as I said, being on NARAS, I got a lot of phone calls saying, guess what? So I think probably Camp was one of those guess what phone calls.
And let me introduce you to Jim and Bill.
Am I sitting alone tonight when I could be out where the lights are bright? It's all because of Jim. It's all because of him. Why am I wasting these precious years? And why am I crying these bitter tears? It's all because of Jim. It's all because of him. Jim doesn't ever bring me pretty flowers. Jim never tries to cheer my lonely hours. Don't know why I'm so crazy for Jim. Jim never tells me I'm his heart's desire. I never seem to set his heart afire. Gone are the years I've wasted on him. Sometimes when I get feeling low, I say, let's call it quits. Then I hang on and let him go, breaking my heart in bits. Someday I know that Jim will up and leave me. But even if he does, you can believe me, I'll go on carrying the torch for Jim. Recognize him if ever he came round my way. I always used to fancy then he'd be one of the godlike kind of men, with a giant brain and a noble head, like the heroes born in the books I read. But along came Bill, who's not the type at all. You'd meet him on the street and never notice him. His form and face, his manly grace, are not the kind that you would find in a statue. And I can't explain, it's surely not his brain that makes me thrill. But I love him because he's wonderful, because he's just my Bill. Because he's, I don't know, because he's just my Bill.
Do you have any other funny stories about the project you want to talk about?
I don't know that they were necessarily funny, but the reaction of the sidemen after Gene would come out of the singing booth, you know, after finishing the take, some would applaud and some would kiss him. And that just made his wife die. I mean, his wife would turn blue and green and red. And, you know, there were things like that. Strangely, and I had an incredible life, you know, being with Bob Hope for 25 years. Oh, and I gave him a copy, and he went crazy. He loved it. So as I look back at my lifetime, Love is a Drag was one of the highlights of my life.
It's a wonderful story.
It was wonderful living it, and I can't tell you how relieved I am to think that whatever you do with regard to releasing the information, whatever you do, I am so pleased that Gene Howard will at least be credited with the fact that those people who appreciate the album, whether they paid $3 or $200 for it, will at least know who the guy was that sang those songs.
Very nice. And if some of you are wondering, no, the album has not been reissued on CD. It remains a very rare LP, and during the show, I was able to bring you 9 of the 12 songs. I want to thank Murray Garrett for solving one of the mysteries of my collection, and for an interview I'm delighted to share with you. This is J.D. Doyle, and you can find more information about the Love is a Drag recording at my website at queermusicheritage.com. You'll also find there more segments of my March show, with many more obscurities from the world of GLBT music. I'm closing with another gorgeous song with, as far as I'm concerned, the pronouns done correctly. By Gene Howard, here's Can't Help Loving That Man.
Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. I've gotta love one man till I die. Can't help loving that man of mine. Tell me he's lazy, tell me he's slow, tell me I'm crazy, maybe I know. Can't help loving that man of mine. When he goes away, that's a rainy day. And when he comes back, the day is fine, the sun will shine. He can come home as late as can be. Home without him ain't no place to be. Can't help loving that man of mine. When he goes away, that's a rainy day. And when he comes back, the day is fine. Come home as late as can be. Home without him ain't no place to be. Can't help loving that man.